Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the next episode of the Empowered Team podcast. The subject of today is, we've all just been discussing before this, so please bear with us as we try to enter the domain of personal development. But in this case, what we want to talk about is the battle that exists, particularly in an environment which is marked heavily by change in just about every dimension that we can possibly think of. But it's a battle that we've decided to call you versus you. And in this context, I'd like to welcome Nick, Phil, Krista, and Jez. And what we're going to talk about, I suppose, in really is the comfort zone within which we exist, stepping out of that comfort zone, and the role of personal leadership and organizational leadership within this, and the difference between wearing a job title and living it and actually doing the work that's necessary to make that happen. So welcome, guys. Who wants to kick looking at everybody? We just had a great pre-warm-up chat, which we sort of all taped. So who wants to kick this off again?
I'm gonna. Great. Because you've just said a few things there. So I really love this topic anyway. So let me talk about the role and the role function. So the importance of the position that you hold, being very, and as I mentioned, awareness. So the role in which you hold, being aware of what you are responsible for, the expectations you put on yourself, versus expectations from an outside point of view of what you should be doing in that role. So I think before we went on this podcast, I gave an example of where some people will see success in the role job title, and there are others that will see success in what they achieved when they held that role title. And they're two very different things. And there is fear on both sides of that fence. So some people work all their life to get to a position of a CEO, for example, and that's their achievement. They see that as success, but they could have failed holding that title. Ultimately, did they understand that the role of a CEO is basically to make the business perform in whatever way, shape or form that is? But I'll kick it off in that perspective, because I see this happening in lots of different positions and functions across all industries, and it's about how we tackle that.
We're going to go against some of the advice, maybe from a staffing solutions perspective, you'd give businesses in terms of like trying to work out the role and the function and what it is. But from a personal growth perspective, I think sometimes that's the problem, right? Sometimes we're pigeonholed into what we feel our role is. And we have fear of going outside the lines, fear of going outside the box to actually get stuff done. Whereas when you think about the emergence of skill-based organizations now, where your role doesn't define you, your skills that you have and what you can contribute to the business is what defines you and it defines your achievement. Suddenly you break some of that fear of, I guess it's the old age saying of, you know, keep within your lane. You know, it's breaking that fear of I'm able to do more in my organization or for my organization to support its success, because I'm not bound and boxed by the role that I'm having, the skills that I should have, because these are my responsibilities.
So Nick, fear of what?
Oh, it ultimately all comes down to, I guess, fear of failure, but it's fear of what other people think of us.
Right. So it's fear of failure is based on in being in a public forum.
Perception.
What, yeah. Right. So there's two things. One is there's fear of what your peers think of you, right? And there's fear of being punished publicly as well.
But I think a lot of it is social pressures and business pressures, right? Because, and I'll go back to, you know, the lockdown times, lots of people took up, you know, creative tasks, you know, drawing, painting, all of that stuff. And if you sat someone in a room and said, oh, go draw this, and they go away and they draw it, they might be happy or unhappy with it themselves. But the minute you say to them, oh, show everyone your drawing, that's when their study, their perception of what they drew can completely change. You can have people that draw something and be there, sit there and go, oh, I really like the drawing, that's fine. The minute you ask them to share it outside of their own mind, it then becomes fear. We put a lot of this social pressure on ourselves, and I think that's reflected in business.
I think so that's much more complex. It's not just as simple or kind of, I'm worried I'm going to look silly. And just taking a really girly perspective on this for a moment, how many times have you said to a woman especially, that's a really nice outfit you're wearing, and they go, oh, it cost me £5 from this shop in sale. I mean, we hear it all the time. It's just like, why do we do that? And it's a fear of a perception of being arrogant or something, or I don't know, what is that fear that drives us to undermine ourselves?
Not being able to take a compliment, I guess.
Yeah. But it's that.
I'm not for sure. I think Chris is on the right track. I think in one sense it's not being able to take a compliment, but why is it you don't want to take the compliment is what Chris is pursuing.
Yeah. Right?
Is it that kind of fear of being perceived as? So two things. One is a fear of being perceived as being arrogant. Yeah, I know I look hot. Or the other bit is
you often do, Phil. You often do.
Yeah, exactly. the other thing is about kind of self worth. I think, which is a lot of. I think sometimes your own inner self confidence, isn't it? So actually. You look at it, but you don't really kind of intuitively deep down really believe it. And I think that's, for me, has got some parallels in the leadership world as well. So actually to get to that level of senior leadership, but actually, you know, do you fully believe that you are that leader? Do you fully believe that you're worthy of that title? Do you fully believe that you could actually do the job that's expected of you? So I think there's kind of all of that. So a lot of what's talked about from my experience in the in business world and outside is that kind of imposter syndrome. When you really get down to it, how many people sat in a room don't feel that they've actually are worthy of the position that they've got, even if that's subconsciously or consciously, really. And there's a kind of deep struggle with that. And how you then overcome that, from my experience, is often people acting in ways that aren't congruent with themselves, like being quite assertive or quite aggressive or quite demonstrative. Because actually those behaviours are often kind of quite fear-based, because they're kind of reacting off the back of it.
It's a really good point, Phil, right? There's a few things that I think are important. Self-confidence, definitely. But I think things like self-confidence grow when you are more self-aware. But then there's another word that I will throw in there, and that's about clarity. See, people, I think, when they're perhaps not so self-confident, especially if they're in a role or they're performing a particular role, if they don't have clarity in what it is that they're able to do or supposed to be doing, should I say, and if you know that your tasks or your objectives are X, Y, Z, and you're very self-aware with your skill base, then they're kind of like, for me, they're like triggers for self-confidence. Because if you're very self-aware that you know your skills are very strong in these areas, and you've got good clarity around what it is that you have been brought in to do, then you should have a fairly high level of confidence of being able to execute that plan. The other thing is that from a psychometric perspective, we all have a personal profile and a work profile, right? And exactly what you just said, Phil, is people will change when they move into their work profile. So for me, I'm very what we call a high influencer, a fairly low dominant person in my personal life. But the moment I wake up and I go into this role at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, my D goes up, because that's part of something that I have to do. And that's why some people might go, that doesn't seem like Jez. You know, if you know Jez well, he's actually a really like chilled out guy, but in work he's a bit of a bastard. I mean, I'm not, I don't think I am, but that is what typically happens, and people go up and down, and you kind of have to get an idea of that. So it's the self-awareness. I think there's a link, but then like it's a bit of a journey into, and all along that is the fear factor. Every part of it kicks in on a certain level.
We thing is for years now we've had this idea of, you know, oh, the best leaders hire hire people that they're better than them, hire, you know, you're not the most you hire subject matter experts, not be the most intelligent, but get the overall picture. You know, what's it, if you're the most intelligent in the room, there's a problem if you're in the leadership level. And we've also had this idea of, you know, we know in businesses we need to create psychological safety. You know, it's now been proven you have to do that. So with those two things in mind, it's how do we put people in a position of growth beyond that imposter syndrome and that fear of being wrong or speaking out or doing this? Because ultimately, if you create both those things, technically they should feel the most empowered, because they should feel, I'm here as an SME to talk about this particular subject because I know the most about it. But also that there's a psychological safety in the room that they can speak out and say, well, 1 minute, that doesn't seem right to me. And challenge leadership. I think for so long we've had this hierarchical approach that to challenge someone in a leadership position is, you know, I've been doing this longer, I'm more senior than you, I know what I'm doing kind of mentality. And that's pressured people and created this fear within business from a leadership level. So we need to change that leadership perception in order to unlock or to remove the fear barrier of those in our teams.
I think, Nick, I totally agree, but I think one of the things is that it's the leadership teams themselves that need to take on that responsibility for that personal growth. So in order for that kind of, what did you call it, the safety net?
Psychological safety.
It's got, we always say this, I'm not a big fan of hierarchical structures, but nevertheless, it's kind of what most of us are used to working in, is that from the very top, they've got to be, and Jez talked about this, they've got to have that self-awareness. Yeah, that's really, for me, that kind of, because that's where the ability for others around you to feel safe needs to be mirrored in that leadership. Because as you say, Nick, if you're in a place where you want to, you think the leaders are doing something wrong and you want to be able to challenge that, those in that leadership have got to feel perfectly comfortable that anyone in the organization can be able to challenge them. If they're not wholly secure within themselves, that can often be seen as a threat. Yeah. And often I've seen it as the person that is junior, that challenges all the time, or challenges some of the time, the leadership, is the one that's difficult, yeah? The one that needs to be managed a bit better. The one that, I'm not sure that Phil is a team player, because every we suggest something, he's always coming up with an alternative. Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, actually, that may not be the case. It may be that you as leaders aren't very happy with being challenged. And that one person that's doing the challenging is the person that's actually in a position where they feel quite self-confident about saying, I don't agree. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And I mean, a lot of it also, going back to, again, if you go back to the psychometric side of things, right, there are certain people that are more happy to challenge than others. You know, that's just a thing, right? Whether they're confident or not, they might be confident in their personal life, but also bring it to work with them. They're quite happy to go, well, I don't agree with what you're doing. And that's it, they're quite outspoken. But there is another thing about, especially within a leadership team, and that's the thing, you know, that we personally went through that kind of discussion, which was, you know, the term right person with the right skills in the right job at the right time type stuff, right?
Mm.
There are so many boards and leadership teams where those people aren't in the right position. And hence, for them to operate effectively in that role, you know, it's really difficult because their confidence is low, because even though they hold the position and they might think that that's the role for them, they can't execute it very well. So their confidence is low. And when they're challenged, it causes problems. So you have a lot of that going on. I'd say 50, 60% of leadership teams are probably full of people that perhaps shouldn't be, or not their skills aren't being as best utilized as they could be had they were in a different role.
I think often they trade on that. They trade on that name badge, don't
exactly.
They?
That's where the job title comes in.
Yeah, and there's a new sheriff in town.
That's right.
I got the COO badge on.
Yeah, they put the sheriff's badge on, and they're like, right, but they don't really know what they're doing.
I would challenge that as well, right? Because I think that, and maybe this is changing. I don't know, but I think that we go out, we create these job profiles and these roles that we want, and we go out and we try and find someone that fits them as best match as possible. And yes, we are on the understanding we won't get someone 100%, but we want 80-90% of a fit for the role. And part of my challenge is if we always hire people that can do the role that we need in the organization there and then, what room for growth or failure is there? Right? If you say, right, as CEO, you need to have done this, and you find someone that can do all that stuff and has done all that stuff, at what stage do they come in? They're already at 100% of everything that you need them and want them to do. So
I think that's very, I don't think you ever get anybody that's perfect, Nick, like you say. Right? I agree with that point. But also, there isn't one person in the world that could execute that role for every single company in the world either. There is always going to be something different, whether it's industry, size of business. We're people, right? So there's always a challenge.
Let's go down the line, right? Let's say a data analyst. Yeah. If you're bringing in a data analyst and you've told them this role, this is your job, this is your responsibilities, and I expect you to meet all of these things to get this job and to keep your job, then immediately before they've even entered the business, there is a fear on them of, oh, they've asked in the job spec for me to how to work with Snowflake database. I don't know how to work with Snowflake database, or what if I found? What I'm saying is we don't go into those conversations to say, look, these are all this is the ideal profile, and we know you're really strong in this area, and we'd love to really help your personal growth and develop you in those weaker areas. Let's start from day one to put a plan in place of where you need growth, where you need support, who else in the business do you need support from to fulfill the other 20% of the job requirement.
I think that happens all the time. I don't think that's an issue.
Can I just bring those sort of threads together in the sense that I really like what we're talking about when we talk about self-awareness. Okay. The difficulty with self-awareness is followed by self-regulation. These are the two primary components of emotional intelligence, so that we can have awareness, but we can't control what we're aware of. So when fear arises, and it can come from the stomach, and you can see it in people. It can appear externally in many different ways. Fear and flight syndrome and stuff like that. People actually shake before they do presentations. I've coached many executives where they're going to do really big presentations, and they're about to collapse before they go in there. So they're having to deal with fear and event there. One of the things you're talking about, and it sort of brings the two threads together, is that the idea there's a growth mindset, right, and a fixed mindset. Now, you can argue about whether ever the job description or what you're actually looking for, I need this, and this is what you just need to execute again, against this idea that human beings are their own asset. And that asset is that they can adapt to new circumstances and learn quickly, but that somehow we create an organizational structure that prevents them doing that. It not only prevents them doing that, it stops them doing that, because though we've lost Krista before, she made the point that peer group pressure, or if you want a more posh word into this, groupthink, right, which is commonly well known, stops people making that step. But what you guys are talking about there, that if you have leaders, as you were making the point, Phil, that the fish rots from the top of the head, right? So So if you have leaders who are able to demonstrate self-awareness, self-regulation, and give that permission so that it is really understood that it's a norm and a value for other people to do that, then they'll grow.
Right.
Nick.
Does that make sense or not?
It makes sense to me, yeah. Nick, you are, I think, a prime example of someone that has had a real accelerated career path.
Yeah.
Like a complete change in skill set. Not change your skill set, actually. You've learned a lot. You had the skills. The skills were identified. You had, yeah, right. Okay. And you've increased that. And then your role has changed.
Yeah.
So I'd be really interested to understand. You must have been very self-aware and you must have been extremely scared at points.
Oh, I still am scared at lots of points when we're in with some of our projects and some of the meetings and bits, and we have like that. I think fear is a driver for some, like for quite a lot of people. If you learn to embrace it, it's there for a reason, right? When people get feared of getting on a plane, that's because it's unnaturally human to be in the sky in a metal box, right? And there have been some that have come down. But when you start to rationalize that fear of, okay, well, what's the worst that can happen, right? And me and my wife, we have these conversations. I die. So then what happens?
Bad when it's a plane.
Well, that's a very good question. But then what happens?
Okay, I'm dead. But I'm dead. Then what happens? Okay, well, you know, you've got to pay for the mortgage. Okay, well, we've got life insurance in place. That's fine. So you'll get that. You know, the actual worst thing that happens, the worst that happens is never really as bad as people think it's going to be, and the chances of the worst happening is a very minute percentage and possibility in thing. We over exaggerate the worst in our own minds, and I think that, going back to your point, Jez, yes, maybe, look, I don't know how, why, but I, when you say about the people that aren't afraid to challenge, you know this, right? Sometimes I will play the role of devil's advocate, not because what I'm saying is what I think is true, but because I think someone needs to make that challenge for us all to make sure we've thought about every angle, every aspect, or at least come it from a different way in order to improve our thinking.
Would it be fair to say, though, you're the only person in the business that would challenge me on specific topics because you know more than me?
Yeah, but it's not also know more than you.
You might not do that. No, but if you didn't, you might not feel so comfortable.
I guess, but then you've created a psychological safety net that means I can. Yeah, even on the early days. And yes, we had the advantage of knowing each other before
Can I just bring in? Because that's an important point that I don't want to get lost in. Before we kick this off, could you put your book up that you showed at the... Right. From me listening, right, this is a book, The Five Temptations of the CEO, that just talked about. And I'm going to embarrass him because he said he got to the point where he was explaining it to his partner, and he said he got emotional. Now, I haven't, in my experience of coaching CEOs and coaching, there ain't a lot of emotion floating around for self-awareness, right? No, there isn't, mate. There isn't, Phil? We talked about this. So could you just talk about that a little bit? Because for a CEO to talk like that, that means that your self-awareness means you are able to look in a mirror. That's what self-awareness means.
Yeah.
You can see yourself.
Yeah.
And in seeing yourself, something happens. And most people don't realize it. It's magical, that.
It's very magical. The important that is what we need to focus on is the driver that sits behind it. In this scenario with me, because I'm one of the founders, it's because I genuinely care. All right? I care about the people that work in the company. I care about the success of the business. There is, you know, I have fear of failure. What happens if we get into a new product and it doesn't work? What happens if, you know, we hire these people and they don't work? Yeah, I know Toby's laughing, but trust me, I don't normally make that.
I have the same fear, mate. Don't worry.
No, but this is the thing, you know, are we going to engage with the right partner? You have the fear. So when you look in the mirror and you are able to see whether do you know what? I'm okay with that. I feel comfortable with that. I feel comfortable with that one. That is definitely me and I need to change it. Oh my God. You know, it's when you realize through more knowledge that there are things which you can do to change, and also that you're not alone. That's the big one, but, you know, because you can get isolated.
I meant that in all sincerity, it is quite like it can be quite an isolating position. Sorry to be.
I think no, I agree with you.
Of organisations, because who can who around often, unless you've got the. I'm not saying that's in your case. Sorry, Jez, to talk over you, but from my experience of working with execs and being in a senior leadership roles myself, it's like there's often this kind of thing. Am I okay to show that I'm vulnerable to the rest of the team that I've got around me? Yeah, I'm supposed to be the leader, you know, the captain of this ship. And for me to turn around and be able to have the confidence and self-confidence to say, I haven't got a clue what I'm fucking doing. You know, is really, am I able to do that? Can I do that? Who can I have those conversations with? Should I be doing that? And you've got all that. Sometimes it's underestimated that psychological challenge. I think
that's exactly it. What you're saying is exactly it. In this book, for example, and in real life, you have to find a balance of being completely honest and transparent about what you feel is going on, and to share your concerns and the what wakes me up at night stuff, as well as projecting that you're confident enough that you're making the right decisions so that people come on that journey with you and they don't think, oh shit, it's losing the plot or it's making the wrong decisions, and therefore you have a company where energy starts to go down and they start to, you know, they don't have the confidence whether or not you're going to get to a place where you need to get to, right? So I think the self-awareness part of it is fundamental.
Let Chris speak, sorry.
Thank you. I think it's where having your personal advisory board is actually really important as well, when you're in those leadership positions, to have those external people who you can soundboard and get advice from. So building that team of professionals within different functions who can support you on your journey and make you feel less lonely, but whilst also having that confidence in your team to show some vulnerability and some kind of, I don't know the solution here. Not quite kind of hands up, I'm right, failing everything, but just that in this area, I'm not the one with the solutions, but that's why you have a team around you as well.
Yeah.
To feed in and support that. And I think that gives other people that bit of respect, because you can always tell when someone's blagging something.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah,
one of my favourite mottos.
I like that. I've never heard that.
Fake
it till you make it.
Hey, mate, I've been doing it my whole life, but that's a really good point, Chris.
I was just gonna say, going back to Jess's point about, you know, if I think about myself and that, I think I had a very, very unique and I guess fortunate experience. So when I was 14, I actually was sent off to the Anthony Robbins Foundation leadership camp. So I went over to America, like just with a couple of people from school, and we went through one of his massive programs of all this, you know, climbing the walls, doing all these other activities. But one of the activities we done in there was what they called the Charles Dickens experiment. And we're talking like 900 people from around the globe, mainly all Americans, but from around the globe in a hall listening to these seminars and these talks and stuff. And this experiment basically put you in a psychological state where they made you kind of vision and think about your fear. And they exaggerated your fear so much that they then started to go through a journey of your life in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, 20 years' time, the past. So basically, you know, think about the ghost of the past, the ghost of the present, and the ghost of the future. or with that fear? And how is it stopping you and preventing you from achieving your life that you want? And in 20 years time, what crappy life are you going to have because this one tiny little fear? And it, over the course of the experiment, it broke everyone down to 900 people in a room crying. We had people, I mean, I'd like military, like US Marines breaking into tears next to me because of their fear, right? And to the point, I mean, I was 14 at the time, away from home for the first time. You know, I tried to get out and I just said, I just need to call my mum. And they literally physically had locked the doors and said, you cannot leave this room until this experiment is over. Right. And so we've gone back into it. And then they start to, when you've broken everyone down, they start to build you up and you come forward one by one. And you basically, they build you up to breaking a board. You've written on the board this fear and you put a big cross through it and you break through the board and you snap your fear in half. And then they build everyone up to the amazing life that you can have in the future. And when you look at when, and thinking about the fear that I put on that board, it's what something it? That. It's not something I don't want to share on the podcast. It's probably a conversation for another day. But the fear that I put on that board, someone very close to me, the event that I feared had happened to them, right? And it, years later down the line, and my wife said to me when this event happened to them, you've handled this in a really weird way. Like your mindset to it is completely separate. And I just said to her, I said, if I live my life with that fear, I know psychologically where what it would do to me and the thing. So why live in that fear? So I do think when you come to that point, Jez, I've had an experience that from a very young and vulnerable age that actually molded my adjustment to fear. And now we can't do that in, you know, as older generation in business, suddenly go, oh, by the way, this will break everyone down psychologically. It's not accepted, right? But
I'll be happy to do it.
I think there is something in, can we create simulations, experiences, or at least be open to vulnerability around us as people and be vulnerable with our work colleagues, with our leadership team, open up more, and therefore that will break some of those fear barriers down.
Nick, by the way, that was an amazing story. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah.
That's it. We can't send everyone off to bloody Andy Robbins boot camp every week, right?
So well, if I send out a disclaimer to all of the people in our business to say that they're happy to do it, then rock and roll, right?
I think like that to me was a pivotal change in the way that I think about fear.
Yeah.
And for that, I don't think about fear in the same way. So, you know, like I said, I always ask the question, what's the worst that's going to happen? I blow up at you one day, Jez, because I challenge you and we have a massive argument. Worst going to happen? I lose my job. Okay, then what do? I'll go find another one. You know, I'll go do something different. I'll do this. Again, we're not in the position, you know, we've built that psychological safety net. But realistically, when people think about what the worst that can happen, there's always someone out there that's had worse, that's gone through worse, the experience on a daily life worse. So the worst that can happen, the worst you can think of, isn't actually that bad. So it's holding you back. You know, that's the mentality I take forward. I think
Nick, it reminds me of an
incredible. Phil, just for a second. Krista?
Thank you. It's I think it holds more than yourself back. It holds your business back and the progress you make back. Because we've all sat in meetings where you know people must have an opinion and you just have this resounding silence around the room. And it's just like, we need to challenge each other, because unless you challenge each other, you're not going to make that progress.
Krista, can you share the story about if you don't mind, was it the inspector that came into the school that changed the program and everyone was agreeing to it and you were the last person who said no?
Think we did that on another podcast.
Oh, was it actually on a podcast you spoke about it? Oh, don't worry about it then.
Can I just highlight in this book what you've just explained, Krista, and I'm pretty pleased that you have, because it tells me quite a lot about you, right? One of the temptations of a CEO is to look for harmony over conflict. Businesses progress a lot further and do a lot better when they basically create an environment where there can be discussion, debate, and conflict. And this is a temptation of a CEO. So it's really great when I hear that, I actually just come out with it, because it's something that I think a lot of people do. I'm potentially a person that would do that. in situations. Not so much today, but certainly would have done a few years back.
Can I just put, sorry, Phil, go for it, and then can I jump in after you?
Yeah, I just reminded me, coming back on the back of Nick's wonderful story, was something really early on in my civil service career. We went on a, we had this American dude came over who was, it was the early days of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And so he came over and he was, I was part of a senior, I was reporting in, I should say, to a senior leadership team that wasn't getting on very well. And this is in the civil service department. So he was brought over to coach and train the team. And one of the things that they did, Nick, was a kind of scaled down version of what you described, was looking at talking to the teams around their kind of vulnerabilities. I was one of the emerging leader that was, I was invited to join the training with them. And there was about 12 people, I think, in this group. And this guy, this American, got them all around. He was doing all these wacky kind of thing, training courses and all these ideas, right? I think by the end of, we were at it for 3 days and he took us away for a country house somewhere. And only 4 people out of the whole of the leadership were willing to go through the full immersive training that the guy would do. Along the way, people were just having massive, what I would describe as hissy fits, which was just fear. We're just like, oh, this is bullshit. I'm not doing this. This is rubbish. I've never seen anything. I don't have to be here. I'm not doing it. And it was amazing how many people very quickly were really exposed to just asking them direct personal questions around their nothing to do with work, around their life. And it was quite fascinating. I was quite young at the time. For reference, I was one of those that ran to the hills as well. It really didn't work. It really didn't work for me. Like I'd realized then that I needed to do some work before I was confident enough within myself to kind of expose what I was, my vulnerabilities in front of others. But it was a fascinating note that I took away from how challenging people find that sort of stuff.
So let me pull the thread out of a couple of things you guys are talking about there, because that's put some posh titles on it. What we have, what is known in organizational learning, right, is called skilled incompetence or skilled unawareness. And one of my Dutch colleagues, who's in the coaching business, we were talking about, is actually it's an inability to deal with conflict. It's exactly what you just said, Jess, right? And this inability to deal with conflict, that is that you won't challenge, you won't say something different, is a learned behavior. But it actually has 3 parts to it, right? One of the first part of making sure that you don't go to the heart of conflict, of which the other side is creativity, the other side is innovation, if you pursue it correctly, is reaching consensus too quickly, or reaching consensus at all, right? Using consensus to defeat another person's point of view, right? Particularly if that point of view is crazy, is different, stands out, it will always be killed by the group. That's how ideas are absolutely murdered before they even get out of the table. The next one is compromise. Seeking a compromise very quickly, right? So that you can all de-accelerate the feelings of fear you have because there isn't harmony in the room, right? Okay. And the last one, and the important one, and a bit what you were talking about there, Nick, a bit what you're talking about, Christian, is self-censure. What this is called is thinking on the left-hand side of the page. So you draw a line down a piece of paper. You have 2 conversations, one external, one internal, your problem at the top. What happens is on the right-hand side, where you're actually writing out what you say and what the other people are saying as you're in a meeting, as you're solving a problem, right? And what you're actually feeling inside. You have a counter narrative, and the counter narrative is always in opposition to consensus, to compromise and self-censor. So you, Jez, you're coaching Nick. You just did a sales presentation for $2 million last week. All right. And it went like that. And you map out what you're actually going to say to him. But you don't want to say to him straight off what's in the inside of that. Are you kidding me? That's the worst presentation I've ever seen in my life. That's what's running in there. So, Nick, let's talk about this. Do you think you could have done a bit better?
I think a lot of that goes on. not with Nick's presentations, because they're always very good.
Hang on.
Right. Not always good.
So, that is the essence of Peter Senge's the fifth discipline. It's the essence of the learning organization, because the biggest obstacle that we have is nobody's honest. Nobody, which is what's happening today, says how it is, because we've learned to not have conflict. Yet without conflict, you can't solve problems. You can't create, you can't innovate. So the fear of conflict, which is what you were just talking about, Nick, and you gave it in such a way that has such meaning to the people around the table, is that you've learned that if you don't say what you need to say, then we all carry on the good ship Titanic. Right. Which is, in essence, what most organizations end up doing. They reach their sell-by date. You know, can you imagine the conversations in Kodak when they were faced with looking at the new digital products that were coming out? No, we don't need to look at this, but let's not talk about it. Let's not create conflict. So there's something in what you are all saying says that the new leader, the leaders that we're talking about, need to be not the person occupying the position of I know everything and I never make mistakes, but somebody who's emotionally aware, who, as you said, Chris, before, has got a team of people that they air traffic control, because they're the ones with the skills, and they're bringing the team together to face conflict and solve problems. Sorry, Christy, you were doing this. I thought you wanted to speak, but you asked me.
I think we've got to be careful with, or at least change the meaning or the terminology of conflict, right? I think when you use the word conflict, people often think very negatively, and the worst case scenario in that, or worst length there. Particularly, I think in the last few years, it's been littered across the news of conflict here, conflict there. They never say that those peace talks are conflict, right? Whereas actually, I think if you look into the legal industry, right, they do mock trials all the time to understand how certain trials will go, to try and improve their trials. You look at the Russell groups of this world, all of their pupils tend to participate in debating, where actually sometimes you'll be put on a motion that is not what you agree with or not what you think with, but you've been asked to put forward the question or the kind of case for that motion. And when we're at uni, we have the right balanced arguments. I think we try to teach people how to take balanced views of things, but the minute we get into business, that all falls down. It stops.
But let's not pussyfoot around things, right? A conversation, a debate, will have conflicting argument, right?
Yeah.
It's just a word. It's the English language. So ultimately, that means that in that conversation, there is conflict.
That's what I'm saying. Conflict doesn't always need to be war, is what I guess.
Right. That's the point, Nick. That's the point. Conflict in business around a table, over a debate, or whatever it might be, is a word. We definitely shouldn't get rid of the word.
I'm not saying get rid of it. I'm saying change the meaning of, change people's perception of the word.
Just explain that, it's debate and stuff like that. It is what it is, and it should be encouraged to a point. I don't think it should be something we're doing every day, because I think that that can change culture in a company quite negatively. If you're constantly in meetings or discussing certain points and it's always a conflicting argument, then that can be quite draining. You know, you do need some positivity and some, and actually what you want to get out of those conversations, the whole point of having a, right, the whole point of having a conflicting discussion is that you get a result out of it, and then everyone can see the result and the, see the success, and therefore
that result encourages them
and they want more. Yeah, and then they're quite happy because the more of these things they have, we see progression, right? So then they see that it's a healthy discussion rather than a, you know, a negative one. That's the place that we need to get
and I,
to.
And I just, no, I think you're absolutely right, James. I think what happens in the training programs that we try to do to understand so that you don't have like all-out war of people having different views, which is what it can lead to, is that we use De Bono's six thinking hats as a process to help. Debutant, to help people begin to learn to take their ego out of the conversation. Because typically the reason that these difficult situations, conflicts, I personally, when you're working with senior business leaders, it is a war. It's an internal war of power sometimes in very big organizations. It is full on combat, all right? You know, some Renault, for example, and others, it's like sort of something out of the papal wars when you listen to the fights taking place. Here at our level, what we're talking about is, can we have a process where people don't have their ego involved, that we talk about the merit of the argument, we talk about what risks that are involved, what's the evidence for making these decisions, what's my gut feeling, what's the problem that we're solving, something that has a discipline around it to move us forward. So you there are tools out there that help, once you recognize it, help teams move through this, right?
I was just going to add to that. I think one of the things around conflict for me is also around language and delivery, isn't it? So I think it's just around how you express it. So I think it can be, if you express it in quite a clumsy way, then it can be quite difficult, I think. So if that makes sense, I think that's what I've experienced in my own time. And I think that's when you think about, and I think this is what De Bono's thinking heads does. It's just, how do you have that conversation, right? Thinking heads, thinking hats. How do you frame that? Basically, for me, all of those things are kind of like processes. How do you make sure everyone's involved in the conversation?
Absolutely.
How do you know that you're thinking about it from the different perspective?
Absolutely.
So, for instance, I've been in meetings where I think an idea is absolutely brilliant, right? But I know that my team's going to be asked to deliver it and my team's already busy, yeah? So what I'm doing is I'm being negative around that solution just because I'm trying to save my bloody team from having any more work, right? We used to have this phrase, and used to really work with me, of saying, what's your background conversation? So people would say, Phil, actually, you're saying no, but what's your background conversation? And then my background, what's going on behind in my head, as you were saying, is that I agree with that as a solution, but my team's too busy to deliver it. So therefore, I'm being quite negative about that solution because I don't want to be drawn into it. And that's like, okay, Phil, that's perfectly great. Just, you know, state that and then we'll deal with that. And I'm always talking to teams. That's a separate issue. We'll deal with that later. Who's going to do it? Let's just agree with, do we think this is a problem? Yeah.
That's a very good way that you talk about in De Bono's, that's Black Hat. What's the risk of following through this idea? But as
As I say, my wife worked for an American business who had a very open and honest culture. And one of their values was like candid truth, basically. But they actually had a process which is hashtag real talk, right? And it was kind of like a precursor that if I wanted to say hashtag real talk, what I'm really saying is that I want to give a bit of an opinion or a criticism or some kind of advice here that may not land very well with the team, the business, the meeting, whatever. And this precursor means that I can be open and honest and not have those repercussions. And I appreciate, I understand, I'm aware that this may have a negative perception of what I'm about to say. So by putting that process in place, they were able to say, look, hashtag real talk, blah, 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 blah. And then someone might go, well, actually, you're right, that's wrong, or blah, blah. That's not saying, well, you're out of order there. It's finding that balance, I think, between being constructively conflicting and progressive, these being, like Jez said, negatively. And I think the more of that negative construct that we give and deliver in the wrong way, the more fear we create in people to not have that psychological safety. Whereas if we can create the open honesty, we remove that fear, and then people then are, you know, being the fear then becomes internal. They haven't got this external fear. The fear becomes, actually, it's me. Like you said, it's my own fear of not wanting to say something, not the fear that the company create.
Yeah,
that's good. So as we bring things to a sort of ending without creating any conflict. So to sort of wrapping it up, guys, you know, what we've talked about is stepping out of your comfort zone, or rethinking of what leadership is without the name badge, within the context of a hierarchy. We've talked about learning as an asset. We've talked about fear and the stories we have about how we face that fear. And we've talked about the issue of our behavior being determined by what other people think of us, what we think they're gonna think of us as well. Some tools of how to do this. How would you start to, you know, to leave the subject now? How would you finish this off, guys?
One thing, I add something around. One of the things I'm taking away from this, because I've learned a lot from this one, it's been brilliant for me personally, is not allowing fear to get in the way of what it is that you want to achieve in your life, and kind of understanding that. And I'm going to use a very, very quick anecdote, if I may. So in a previous life, I used to be a ministerial advisor, and I got involved in writing and speech writer, and a very famous politician in the UK, I was involved in writing a speech very early in their career, and they were doing it, having to do it at a Labour Party conference, and the whole country was watching them perform. And so we were all come at the back of the hall, kind of say, how's he doing? And then his kind of like chief of staff said, oh, he's all right, he's just throwing up at the moment before he goes on stage. And, you know, and I was just like, what? You know, this is one of the most charismatic kind of leaders of our time in the Blair government, if you like. But he still had this absolute fear of public speaking, but he didn't allow that fear. I was just amazed, you know, someone that I looked up to had that. And he was quite open about it with the rest of his team, and everyone knew this about them. So it's like, so even though he had this big fear, he went on to have he didn't allow that to get in the way of what his dream, his ambition, what he was doing. Then over time, he worked on managing it, and he did very well at managing it, but he always had that kind of fear of public speaking.
Thank you for that. So it's really, well, it's actually deep, man.
Yeah. Want to know who it is now, don't you?
Going to go through the annals.
For me, it's that we're extremely good at finding solutions as people and managing situations as people, more to our fear of it. But so the question is, so what, or what's the worst that can happen? Just ask yourself, what's the worst that can happen? And if that happens, so what? Yeah, so what? And then keep going, so what, so what, so what, until you actually realize that it's not a bigger challenge as you think it is.
Cool.
Krista? I think
with your story before, it's great. Sorry,
I think I would just encourage everyone listening to really look within and take time to have that reflective process. How do they like to be treated? How have they responded in certain situations, and which have been negative, which have been positive? But also thinking about how they impress themselves onto their teams, whether it's a peer team, superior team, what's the other word? but just really kind of evaluating how you behave and the impact it has on others.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm in Krista's camp on this one. I think it's really important for people to be able to look in the mirror. I would encourage anybody in any business, no matter what level that they operate, to actually take some time out to go, you know, what am I good at? What where can I really help? Like, what things really do bother me? Am I doing a good job? You know, reflecting on what is my actual role here? Am I helping people enough? Where am I going wrong? Just spend a day doing that, because I think you can, just in half a day, like, just that can literally change how you perform. And also, I think it helps how you feel. Because when you've gone through that process, at least that way you know what you're working on, and you can start to make very small changes which change how you feel, might make you feel more confident, you know, you're not so frightened of doing certain stuff because you now know why you feel uncomfortable in a particular situation. It often, I think, builds some self-confidence, meaning that the people that are around you have a different perception of what you're doing. And in some respects, I think they feel that you're maybe more in control because you're not all over the place. And the way that you come across is much more normal and natural, as opposed to moving from one profile to the other profile. So there's lots of different things that happen. There's certainly, I mean, this is from my own experience in the last 6 months of just some books I've read and stuff like that, and time out, and actually really being quite critical on yourself as well. So I'd encourage everyone, you know, to deal with fear, you versus you. It's about self-awareness.
Thank you. I would like to say thank you to all of you. As Phil said, I really enjoy the podcast.
Yeah, me too.
I enjoy being with you guys. I learn something every time. To the people listening, I hope that you learn something from what we're trying to do here. I hope you respect it's unscripted. In terms of what I do, I don't know whether you can guess that, but it's unscripted. And that what we're trying to do is we are learning as we're doing each podcast to get better at bringing you content that has real-time meaning. And we're not trying to lecture you on in some sort of consultancy way, but we're trying to provide something that you can hear us talking about authentically and genuinely, hoping that you guys grow with us. So please, if you think that what we're doing is of interest, then we'd be really grateful if you like what we've done. Press the like button. And if you'd like to continue hearing and helping us fulfill our promise of bringing you exciting content, then please press the subscribe. And with that, I'm going to say we will, the Empowered Team podcast team, we'll see you on the next one. Thank you very much.
Yes, bye-bye. Tommy. Bye all.